This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We've talked hoops. We have talked football. We've talked about way too early All-America team. We've given you schedules. We've given you NCAA news. We've given you interviews. Yeah. And I've also teased you about the Mega Millions last night, which, for the record, nobody won.
Yeah.
Nobody won. So we're going to – nobody
won. I thought you won it.
No, I didn't say I won it.
I thought you were going to tell everybody you won it.
I didn't say that. I said I got off to a hot start, if you were listening. I got off to a hot start.
I did that. I heard that.
All right. Yeah. Nobody won it. So it's going to go to $1 billion this week. Just saying. But I will tell you, Wes,
that's
real quickly.
That's about where I start buying tickets.
Is that when you get, again,
that's
everybody's,
where I start buying tickets,
everybody's got
way.
Their number.
Yeah.
I'm a 500 million guy.
I got
guy.
A tipping point.
All right. I'm at 500. When something gets to 500 million, I'm in. All right. So I told you about my inability to pick a number the first go. And I normally seldom do this stuff. But I got, what, 3 of 60 numbers. Right? I bought $20 worth of tickets, which is 10 tickets, 6 picks a ticket, 60 total numbers. I got 3 of 60 numbers right last week. Well, I decided to do this again. I bought 5 tickets. Right? 5 tickets. That's it. I didn't go 10. I went 5. For last night.
Wow.
Well, I went birthdays, right? I went birthdays. Now, as you know, unlike the internet, which is wrong, my birthday is October the 19th. So I went 10/19. Well, guess what? This morning at 2:30 a.m., I look up the numbers. And they put out there, first number, 10. Got that.
Right.
Second number, 19. Got that? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm thinking, I am on my way. Now, apparently, and again, I don't know how this stuff's even, I don't even watch it. And I don't even know how it's played. I just pick numbers. Well, apparently, like the Mega Ball or something was 16. I had 16. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, I am halfway to a billion. Unlike Coach K and Duke last night with a slow start, I am smoking. I feel like Virginia basketball. Right, I'm making everything I look at. And I almost was like, got that cold, clammy feeling that, Wes, I've got 3 in my back pocket. If the next 3 match,
right.
I am going to come on this show this morning with the greatest attitude known to man. That's where it ended.
Because it's going to be your last show.
No, I would continue to work. I'd continue to work. I'd be, come on. If somebody gave you $1 billion... You just go sit at home all day and smoke a cigar? Nah, you'd get tired of that.
No.
You got to work.
I wouldn't do that.
What would you do?
I'd work at 18 holes every day. It was tolerable from a weather perspective.
Get bored. You'd get bored to tears.
And when it wasn't tolerable in that location, I'd get on the PJ and go to some place where the weather was good.
Yeah, but
you'd work on 18 holes.
Yeah, you'd get bored. Playing golf every day puts you to sleep. You get tired of that. You get tired. You'd have to do something, right? But I was halfway there, Wes. I got halfway. So, by the way,
they let me do a game or two along the way. I could pay for my own entry fee into doing a game. I bet I could buy my way up the slot a little high if I had willing to pay my way in.
You think they'd let you leave the house to do a game?
$100,000. What game y'all gonna let me do? Yeah, buy my way up. Here's $100,000. What game do I get to do this week?
You can do it.
Okay, I'll take
you
that.
You do any game you want. Coming off the hip. By the way, I'll tell you what. You know what else would be cool? If you won $1 billion.
What?
Here's what I'd do. If I won $1 billion on this Mega Millions, I told you, I'd take care of all of you. I've told you this the other day. If I win it, I'm taking care of all of you.
Yeah, you did.
But I've come up with a different idea. I will take care of all of you, and I will give you guys cash to do whatever you want. But I'm going to do it by putting it in McDonald's bags. I'm going to put the money in McDonald's bags and hand it to all of you.
I knew you wouldn't let it go. I knew you wouldn't let that go.
Oh, my God. What are we doing? Okay. Is the world nuts? Seriously. Have we lost our minds?
A couple of notes here to share before we review the night in basketball and Jay Billis coming up at 9:15. Philip Rivers has just now, we mentioned this because he's an NC State legend, right?
Yes,
quarterback of the Wolfpack, great player in this league, unbelievable pro career, and his pro career has come to an end. Philip Rivers is going to announce his retirement officially from the National Football League after a year in Indianapolis. He is, for those of you that have followed Rivers' career, he is going to be a high school coach at a high school in South Alabama. He said that the other day after the Colts lost, and after a week of thinking about it, he has decided to retire. A couple of sad notes in the last week. We lost coaches who were head football coaches in the ACC in the last 10 days who both had impacts at their respective schools, but they're not top-of-mind guys when you think of those institutions. A week ago, 10 days ago, we lost Red Wilson, who was into his mid-90s, who passed away. One of the great bumper stickers ever created in the late 70s, early 80s was Red Means Go at Duke when he took over the Duke football program. He was a tremendous coach at the NAIA level at Mighty Elon, by the way. Cheers to the Phoenix / Fighting Christians. He then took the Duke job and had the foresight to bring a young, enterprising assistant coach in to run the offense. Right, Pac?
Red means
and that guy was Steve Spurrier.
Did you have one of those bumper stickers? Because I remember seeing those things all over the place. Red means go.
Yeah. Red means go. And Steve Spurrier came in and worked with Red Wilson, and Red Wilson essentially gave Steve Spurrier a full shot at running an offense. And with Ben Bennett at quarterback, the football was in the air in the old 22 personnel ACC, as they say. The other loss occurred just this past weekend out in Utah, where into his early 90s, Chuck Mills passed away. He was a football coach at Wake Forest at a time when the Deacons were kind of looking for an identity. The best place to know where Chuck Mills' legacy fits at Wake Forest is he was the coach prior to John Makovic. John Makovic had great success in his second year at Wake Forest, right? Deacons had Jay Venuto. They had James McDougal. They had all these unbelievable talents. Chuck Mills had put most of those football players on the Wake Forest scholarship roll. Originally from Utah, lived in Hawaii not long after retiring from the game, actually coached at Utah State and I think at a small college into the early 1990s. A fascinating, fascinating guy. Chuck Mills, who coached Zielinski and some of those great running backs at Wake Forest, passed away also over the weekend. So just a couple of notes to share with you before we review the night in basketball in the ACC. But Red Wilson and Chuck Mills, now those were football coaching characters in this league.
No question. By the way, you mentioned Steve Spurrier. Can you imagine if Spurrier was still at Florida, the jokes he'd have about Tennessee this week? Do you think he'd have a few zingers this week about Rocky Top?
Yeah.
Just asking.
He may have a few anyway, and he's not coaching.
I tell you what, Tennessee has been so embarrassing this week that even Ryan McGee may finally mention his alma mater in the bottom 10. That's how bad it is in Knoxville.
Nice.
I mean, he was able to ignore them somehow in his column all season, which was remarkable given that that's his alma mater. But he even must admit now that they are the biggest joke in college football. Just saying.
Oh.
But I digress. Not that's for another network to address, not necessarily us.
By the way, our stats and research group of Packer and Durham, not of Big ESPN, the stats and info, this is our Packer and Durham stats and research, has just told me that the San Francisco Giants batted .263 last year. You picking numbers is worse than that.
Oh,
from an average standpoint.
No, let me put it in perspective. I did that math. I have now picked 90 numbers in the last week for Mega Millions and the Powerball. I've picked 90 numbers. I've gotten 9 right. That's 10%. So basically, I am the reverse of MJ Walker and Gina Conti on the free throw line. They're at around a 90% clip of getting it in and making it. I'm the exact opposite. So. Yeah. That's going to be the, that to me will be the fight. It's the MJ Walker, Gina Conti free throw competition where they're about a combined about a 90% clip of accuracy, and I'm in the exact opposite. I'm at about a 10% clip. So, but I'll keep trying.
Well done.
And I'm telling you, I'm taking care of all of you if I hit them all. I will take care of all of you.
Great. That's awesome. Looking forward to it. Is that tax-free, by the way, or are we going to pay taxes on it?
No, you don't worry. You do whatever you got to do. When I give you the sack full of cash in the McDonald's bag, that's up to you and your accountant. But if I hit it, I'm taking care of you.
All right. Very good. Couple of quick notes from the ACC last night here in the Power Hour. Pittsburgh delivered the goods last night against Duke. The Panthers won 79-73. Justin Champagne delivered the double-double. He was 12 of 15 from the floor on the way to 31, 14, and 5 blocks last night for the Panthers, who continue to roll 4-1 in the league, 8-2 overall for Jeff Capel in his third season at Pittsburgh. Jalen Johnson back to form for Duke, and he was tremendous. 24 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists for the Blue Devils, who are at Louisville on ESPN. This coming Saturday. Duke now 3-2 in the league, 5-4 overall. The other game of note last night at the Dome. Holy smokes. Syracuse fell behind early, and you were just starting to wonder a little bit, right? And then all of a sudden, Marek Dolezal went out with 2 fouls. Jesse Edwards comes in. Kadari Richmond checks into the ball game to play for the Orange, and all of a sudden, Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard mistake it for the home gym at Coach Boeheim's house. All of a sudden, they start raining threes, and the Orange win going away 83-57. Isaiah Wong only had 16 points for Miami, and it took 16 shots to get it. Syracuse took over the ball game after a sluggish start pack. And both teams very impressive in posting wins last night.
Yep, down 11-2, no problem. A 23-3 run. Next thing you know, Cuse cruises. They win by 26. And again, they had 4 of their next 5 at home. Now's the time for Syracuse to make a move.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
All right, prepare yourselves. We have real talent. We have real talent coming to the show. Just telling real you talent. That right now.
Yeah.
844 say ACCN is the number for the program. All right, let's get right to it. Our next guest joins us, maybe for the last time based on what I've seen. Yeah, he's on the list. As of this second, he is on my list for the McDonald's bag of cash from the Mega Millions I'm going to win. But I'm going to tell you, over the top of his head, I see something that's not going to be well received in the Mega Millions of Packer household. Jay, can you explain what's going on there?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles. I'm a Dodger fan. Have been for years. I respect other choices, but a Dodger fan. It's a good time for a change to be a Dodger fan.
Wrong answer, Jay. Pack. That would be incorrect.
That is not a good recruiting tool for the Giants, I can tell you that.
Well,
that's not a good free agency sort of, hey, come play for us. This is what you may look like someday.
Hey, let me tell you something. When I win this $1 billion, I might just go out to L.A. and buy that team and put it right in the Pacific where it belongs. You know what I'm saying, Willis?
Oh,
brother.
Oh.
All right, let's get to hoops before you and I get in a fist fight and I take you right off my Mega Millions list. That's another million I just saved. What did we learn last night with Pitt and Duke, both of these teams? It was some kind of game.
It was a good game. Pitt is very good, and they're getting better. And I think Justin Champagne is as good a player as there is in the league this year, and has proven it, especially in big games. And he does it at both ends of the floor. Duke is closer to being a good team, but they're not there yet. And Pitt must have shot 40 free throws last night. They were on the line. It seemed like every other play, and that was with Duke playing zone. And, you know, anytime when you play zone, you're really trying to take away dribble penetration and trying to keep your opponent out of the middle. And zone, your help is positioned automatically. And, you know, it's going to change. But I thought Pitt got into the lane with ease, and you know, Duke's got a long way to go defensively, but they've got the makings of a good team, and there's still a plenty of time left, although time's starting to run out, but there's still plenty of time left with Jalen Johnson back for them to become the team that they expected to be at the start.
Duke, Jay, I want to get to Duke in a minute, but I want to spend time on what Jeff's done in 2 years and change at Pittsburgh, because the combination of Champagne and Tony and Xavier Johnson, when you have, quote, a big three like that, he then kind of has the perfect role guys to go with those players. And it just seems like that there's really good culture, really good foundation, and surprisingly productive depth on that basketball team.
Yeah, Pitt's good. And, you know, last year, Wes, they had – I'm not sure what their mantra is this year, but last year it was fight. You know, they had to learn how to fight through 40 minutes and fight through tired and all the different things you have to do to win, sort of the foundational principles that everybody talks about but are really hard to do. And they laid that foundation. And so now they're – you know, now after laying the foundation, they're building a pretty darn good house. And they've got the tools to do it. And Champagne and Tony are the two guys, I think, that provide them with that verve that you need to be really good. That both of them can score. And they you know, like last year, I thought Pitt was one – if you used a boxing analogy, they were going into the ring thinking about, well, how do I not get knocked out? How do I not get hit? And now they're thinking about punching. They're thinking about aggressively knocking their opponent out. And they're good. Look, the ACC is not what it has been in past years. I think right. Every coach in the league would agree to that, even though they don't want to. They would agree to that. There are no super teams in the league this year. And so that means that on any night, if you don't play to your capabilities, you will get beat. And you're vulnerable to getting beat. You know, that's not true in the Big Ten this year. You know, you can in the Big Ten, you can play really well and lose. In the ACC, if you play really well, you're going to win.
Jalen Johnson, we know he's a really, really talented dude. But, man, it was just so cool to watch him kind of take that game over last night when Duke looked like they're in trouble. They're down 15 second half. It looks getting away from them. But man, Johnson just went off, right? And Champagne was awesome, too, going, okay, cool, that's a great play. Now it's my turn. And while it became an incredibly competitive basketball game, just to see the two individuals there in particular take it to another level was really highly entertaining. And for folks that stayed up and watched the ball game, they know what we're talking about. But man alive, Jay, what's Duke going to do, though, in terms of the next level now that Johnson's back at 100%? Matthew Hurt did a great job leading into this. But they're going to make that thing work, don't they? Because Hurt's been such a go-to guy. But Jalen Johnson was the man last night.
Well, he could have been the man all along if he hadn't been hurt. I mean, remember his first game, even though when against Pitt, I think it was Coppin State, he had 19 points, 19 rebounds. I mean, you know, last night against Pitt, he had, I think, 24, 15 or 16 rebounds. He had 7 assists and 4 block shots.
Right.
I mean, that's about as complete a game as you can have from a statistics perspective. And he can make plays. He can grab and go. Like, he can grab the rebound, take it himself. He can put it on the deck and find people. He's a good passer. He's improved his shooting. You can tell that even in the time he's been off, there's been some form shooting work where he's improved his jump shot to where it's becoming more consistent, because that was the biggest sort of biggest knock on him, if you want to call a lottery pick a knock. You know, there's a knock on a lottery pick, is that he's not a consistent perimeter shooter, but he's got a good stroke. He'll get there eventually. And I think he's getting there now. But I don't think, Pac, they're sort of the issue for Duke is going to be fitting players in offensively, because I think they can score. I don't think offense is their problem. I think their issue is how do they become more difficult to score upon? And you know, their offense, they don't turn it over like crazy at all, but they do turn it over too much. And there are times when they take some shots that I'm sure they'd rather not have taken, but that winds up hurting their defense, and they give up some easy things. But you can tell from the foul rate they have, the fact that they give up the paint too easily, they don't protect the painted area, and it's too easy to put them into help right now. So when there's dribble penetration, all of a sudden you got to bring help, then somebody's got to help the helper, and all of a sudden you're in rotation and sometimes scramble. And especially with a young team, it's really hard to overcome that. The best defensive teams first, in my view, first do a good job of guarding the ball so they're not put in help as often. And if you're not in help as often, and that's why they're playing zone, frankly, because their man-to-man defense has not been effective. I think they're still going to play some man. They'll have to. But I think the zone, going to zone, is a pretty good indication that they're having a hard time guarding.
Jay, Florida State comes off a pause, and they look like they have been – they didn't skip a beat. In fact, they shoot, 71% against NC State. They grind against Carolina. And then the other night at Louisville, they threw three or four haymakers in the first 5 or 10 minutes of that game and essentially distanced the rest of the night. Virginia beats Clemson by 35. Tony Bennett's team, because NC State's on pause, didn't play midweek. The Cavaliers and the Seminoles are delivering here. Are they the best the league has got right now?
I think so. I think Louisville can be, but Louisville's incomplete. You know, Louisville doesn't have Malik Williams, and until he's back and healthy, they're not going to be the team that they were capable of being at the start. I think that's pretty clear. They're still good and still NCAA tournament good, but they don't shoot the ball particularly well, Louisville. So, you know, Florida State, what surprised me about Florida State isn't that they're difficult to play against, because you can't run – you can't run your set plays against Florida State. They're going to take you out of them.
Right.
And they're so physical, and they keep coming at you. And I think MJ Walker's been not only first-team All-ACC good, but I think you could argue, you know, in the player of the year conversation for the league. But Florida State's offensive prowess has surprised me. You know, Raekwon Gray has been excellent, and he checks, you know, every box in the box score. You know, he'll get in every category. And then the emergence of Balsa Koprivica as a, like, the stuff he was doing the other night was stunning against Louisville. I mean, he's grabbing the ball and bringing it up, and you know, made that steal at midcourt and finished the play.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's got this look on his face of determination that you see in older, experienced, really good players that gives all his teammates a feeling of confidence in him, and he's really blossoming. So I would say Florida State and Virginia clearly are the best teams, but they're not the best teams in that they're head and shoulders above everybody else. I just don't see it that way. But Virginia is getting better and better. Man, their offense the other night, I couldn't believe it. It was like watching a team in a shoot-around. You know, they weren't missing.
Yeah.
By the way, the other cluster of teams, and I'll throw Pitt in there. Virginia Tech off to a great start. Coach Young's done an amazing job. Clemson, despite what happened to them on Saturday, has been pretty good. But if I gave you Virginia Tech, Clemson, and Pitt, of those three, who's got the highest upside moving forward to the rest of the regular season?
Probably Pitt. I think Pittsburgh does, because they've got Champagne. And I think having him can be a difference maker. I mean, I really like Virginia Tech. They're very good. And they, you know, I don't think they've got a first team all ACC player. Lokeve Aluma could be. And Jalen Cohn, when he comes into the game with the instant offense he has, he's really difficult to deal with. They're good. But I would put Pittsburgh up there first, but you probably use the right term. It is a cluster. It's hard to tell some teams apart, because, and we're going to see, we've already seen it. We're going to see differing levels of consistency going forward, just because of all these teams are dealing with. To expect everybody to be laser focused all the time, as if this were a normal year, I think is unreasonable. And it's not an excuse for a team losing or not playing well, but it is a reason. I think we have to be realistic about that. I mean, I know I'm not the same every day. I don't know how we could expect them to be.
Last thing for me, we saw the NCAA set a schedule yesterday for the men's basketball championship. We also saw some waivers and sub-500s and minimums and things like that. Waivers, if you will, be set up for the women's tournament. Is the waiver concept something we could be looking at on the men's side before we're done, Jay?
You mean to let in sub-500 teams?
Yeah.
they can already do that now if they want to. There's really no, you know, no restriction on it, just because they're taking the 68 best teams after, or the best teams after the automatic qualifiers are in. So I don't think we're going to see any of that stuff. We're going to see sub 500 teams in conference get in, and we've already seen that. But you know, this is such an odd year. I mean, I'm wondering what's going to happen when we get toward the end of the year. If the pandemic stays where it is or gets worse, and the latter seems to be what the experts are predicting, whether programs that are struggling or having a hard time decide to pack it in for the year, smaller conferences decide not to have their conference tournaments or just have a championship game. They take their two best teams and have a championship game for television reasons. There's going to be a lot of factors that are going to come in. And then you're going to have the protocols before the tournament, because you have to meet these protocols before you go to Indianapolis. So we could see some teams falling out. I mean, who knows? I haven't looked at all the scenarios of it, because it's depressing, frankly, to think about it. But we could see those things. And it's one of those years, guys, where I think we're just going to have to take what we get and sort of be happy with it. And you know, I've been kind of laughing a little bit at the idea where people are talking about, well, there's going to be more human element in the tournament this year. And I'm like, it's human element every year. That's all it is human element. When you have a committee, the committee gets data, but the data is processed by humans. The whole thing's human element all the time. And we have different standards every year and a different result seemingly every year. So, you know, unless they go to a computer, that's always human element.
Jay, what was your take on Kim Mulkey's comments the other day about, you know, it's the almighty dollar, yada, yada, yada? I mean, it's been a lightning bolt on radio. I'm just curious to get your take on that. I have not heard your position yet.
Well, I was just there and actually heard Kim Mulkey talking about it live and in person. And I think a lot of, you know, typically what winds up happening is a lot of it gets misconstrued. But all she was really saying is, let's be honest about what we're doing, that this, we're doing all of this for the money. She said she's had the coronavirus and it is no joke. She doesn't feel comfortable with what we're doing, because they had 4,000 fans at that game I was at Baylor. And I can tell you, it was a little bit uncomfortable, especially given, you know, the differences in different places you go around the country. And, you know, look, I'm traveling a lot. It's not comfortable, but I'm doing it. It's my job. But I'm honest about what I'm doing. I'm doing my job for money. I love it too. But right now I wouldn't be traveling around, but for the fact that it's my job. But what Kim was really saying is, and she said this, I heard her say it. She says, nobody's complaining. We're doing it and we're going to keep doing it. But just let's be honest about what we're doing. This is for money. And that's really largely been my point, is we haven't really discussed the how and the why of all that we're doing. I've never said we should pause. I have never said we should stop playing. But if you go back to the beginning of this, all of the pontifications from sort of NCAA member institutions were no students on campus, no college sports. We are different. We are not going to do what the NBA is doing. I mean, they all said that. And they all said, we will never do bubbles. That is professional. We are amateur. We are different. And look what we're doing. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's not wrong. And it's not wrong for any of us to do things for money. It's not. Everybody does things for money. It's okay. It doesn't make it wrong. But what is wrong, in my view, is trying to act like somehow we're different than everybody else. And we're not doing this for money. We're doing this to give the kids a chance to play. And we're not doing it for that. That might be the fifth or sixth reason. Because we're not, none of these schools are putting on the school play this year to give the kids a chance to do what they've spent their whole life doing. Or we don't have, you know, the school orchestra, or then all these other things. They're not doing any of those things. They're doing the things that generate revenue. And I understand it. I'm not complaining about it. I'm not faulting them for it. The only thing I'm saying is, don't tell me that money's not the reason. It absolutely is the reason.
Jay, I'll say one thing in closing. All right, other than your terrible taste in baseball, I thought you were outstanding this segment. Outstanding.
That is very nice of you to say, especially after showing that hideous representation of yourself.
It is right there. Three-time world champion this decade.
You know, I'm not sure which is the bigger stiff as I look at those two.
Coming from you, that's saying something.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure to welcome. This week, if we get LaFonso on here, we'll have the hat trick by Friday night for another fabulous edition of Bald Men Not on Campus.
And, you know, I was going to say one more thing. When Jay brought up free throw shooting attempts, I was going to go infamous ACC index card on him and tell him that Pitt shot 37, not 40, but he knew that.
Close enough.
And
you guys will be at the top of your profession if you can get LaFonso Ellis to curse just once. That's my life's goal, just to get him to curse.
No.
How much? Hey, by the way, how much cash could you put in a McDonald's bag? Because we will do this for money. You know, we do this for money.
You know. One thing about that. I mean, talk about a lack of class. Like Coach K would never have done. He never did that with me. My money was put in a Morton's bag, and it was like it was beautiful in the presentation.
You know, listen. If you're going to come on ACC Network and have jokes, make sure it's a Bojangles bag, all right? At least appeal to the spot, or better yet, in your case, Food Lion. It's a bigger bag. It's a bigger bag of cash.
It was actually as great as those products are. It was actually of higher class than that. It was five star. You know, I had to have a coat and tie on when I picked it up. It was really beautiful. It was touching.
You're all there over. You go. Listen, stay safe.
Touching. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it as always.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Jay Billis, always entertaining, funny, cutting up. But man, what a good game last night, that Pitt-Duke game. All right. This has already been discussed, Wes, as far as how crazy the year is, right? It's totally upside down. Ooh, COVID hoops, literally day by day, we're not sure which games are going to get played, postponed, canceled, flip-flop, you're available, let's go play. I mean, it's nuts. And it's going to be that way probably for the duration. So it's kind of hard sometimes to say, man, this year reminds me of, because we've never really quite had a year like this. But we've also had years in the ACC in the past where it has kind of felt upside down and goofy and bizarre, where you just can't quite figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of go back here, and we're going to do this in a swath of about 25 years here, to go back and find tight fits in the league. Now, every year you can look at the ACC standings and say, man, what a run it was, kind of between third to seventh or something like that. That's just normal bill of fare of how good this league can be. But when you look at the standings right now and you see Virginia undefeated at 5-0, you see a one-loss Virginia Tech, and then Florida State with one loss, Pitt with one loss, and you see immediately that there are differences in number of games played. I was asked about this on social media yesterday, and we don't have to show you the whole run. We're taking you through the 2 and 3 cut here. But you see right now that here we are in, third week in January, and the difference is 3 between kind of the top 11 teams in the ACC. So let's take that in mind, Pack, and go backwards and look at some of these years where that margin in the loss column has been tight, right? Because that could be what we're headed to, given where we are right now.
Right. We keep talking about who's the alpha. You know, the top part of this league is hard to figure, even though Virginia and Florida State recently have given you thought to say those are the two teams right there are the alphas, and they could very well be. But I do think there are others that could join the mix. We've bragged about Pitt today. Virginia Tech's played extremely well. Clemson, really, with the exception of their stinker against Virginia, got an opportunity tonight to win another game. Louisville, once they get holes, Jay Billis pointed out, could be one of those teams. Will Duke or North Carolina get on a run? I mean, we can go deep as far as teams that still have the opportunity to join in the mix and get a part of this thing. And that's what's kind of interesting when you look back at the history of the league. As you said, even within the last 25 years, we have had years where you sit there and you go, man, I'm not exactly sure what we've got here. And those are, again, in years that we didn't have a pandemic.
Well, and let's go to 2007, for example. And that'll be one of the first we show you here, because when you go back to 2007, you're going to see that 5 teams finished basically within a game of one another.
Right.
And then there was a split where it went down to two back, I mean, or three back with Georgia Tech and Duke at both 8-8. But in 2007, you had 2-11-5 and 3-10-6. That's kind of what we're talking about here. Another one to take a dance at. You want to go to a little bigger schedule sampling? Well, let's go to 2017, just 4 years ago. North Carolina won the regular season. We played 18 conference games that year. And the Tar Heels won the 2017 regular season at 14-4. But look behind them. Well, I mean, two games in the next, what, eight, nine teams back?
And I got to tell you, it kind of feels that way now. I mean, to me, I think four seems to be about the right number, assuming we have a whatever we think a full schedule could look like. To me, this snapshot of this year right here kind of feels like what we could potentially see late February, early March in the league.
I agree with you. And I think the larger measure of conference games, the differential in conference games could also create that percentage problem. We talked about a little bit with football, right? Yeah. It didn't ever come into play for the championship game, but it came in play on some of the others. Now, you're saying, well, wait a second. There's got to be something that's a little bit more clarified. Yeah. Well, here's one. 1995, to me, is the one where the league may have been at its best, but it also gave the NCAA committee an out.
Yep.
And I want to emphasize that.
Yep.
You had four teams tie for first at 12-4. Those are the only four teams that went to the NCAA tournament that year. Why? Because you made the committee's job easy. Because the fifth place team was four games back. Now, granted, it was only a nine-team league in 95 pack, and it had some major firepower at the top of it now. Holy smokes.
Yeah, top heavy. And it gets one of the reasons why we keep talking about who's the alpha, right? We keep talking about the glob last year was in the middle. It's now kind of moved to the top. And that's why all these games, a game like last night with Duke and Pitt becomes really important.
Yep.
Clemson, Georgia Tech tonight. Those are two teams that are thinking, hey, we were playing really good basketball before we paused. Can we continue that and maybe advance up here in the top third of the league? Duke and Louisville this coming weekend. Huge game for both of them. Big picture. So it's why we keep emphasizing the alpha and the glob and all that stuff, because you go back through history of the ACC, you kind of see where this thing's going. And who knows what this NCAA tournament's going to look like, given the parameters that have been laid out. And there's going to be so much jockeying. When we come up tomorrow with our accounting, you're going to see probably crazy differences from just a week ago, and we didn't even have a full schedule, for crying out loud. So it's just that the world that we're in right now, literally every day something's changing.
Yeah. 94-95, by the way, that year, Randolph Childress. That's all you need. That's all you need to know, right, Pac? 95 was Randolph Childress.
He was unbelievable in Greensboro, that ACC tournament. I'll never forget it. Just unstoppable.
Yeah. Tim Duncan, by the way, was the National Player of the Year, but nobody owned Greensboro like Randolph Childress, by the way. I mean, holy smokes. He lit up the ACC tournament and started in game one and didn't let go, by the way.
Yep.
Holy cow. So, 1995.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of a fun show. Thanks again to Brooke Wyckoff at Florida State and Jay Billis breaking things down for us. All right, Mr. Durham, a little bit of everything today on the show, right? I mean, we covered just about every base known to man in the 3 hours they allot to us each and every day.
And you know what we have just enough time for? Congratulating Florida State and Wake Forest.
Golfers.
Who got the Camp Creek Seminole Invitational underway on the college side for the men. They both went 22 under par. Florida State won the event on the second playoff hole in almost like an ACC tournament, if you will.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, there were a lot of teams there.
Yeah, and Jacob Bridgman won the individual. He went red 15, kind of a Drew Brooks special. Red 15 for the W.
Golfed it like Packer.
No, I didn't have that game. Didn't have that game. No.
64, 66, 71. That's Packer stuff.
No. Well, that would be true, but the problem is I was getting around to like number 13 or 14. I still had another four or five holes left to go when I had that 64 and 66 going. So, but congrats to everybody. Right. Good start for the golfers. Good to see them playing, quite frankly, to be honest with you. Right? Thank God they're back on the links where they should be.
With you on that. Tonight on this channel, 7 o'clock, the Dean E. Smith Center, Chapel Hill. Jay Alter, Malcolm Huckabee will have coverage for you of North Carolina and Wake Forest. Also tonight, Clemson and Georgia Tech, two really nice longtime ACC basketball rivals. Get going. You got your favorite obscure player from a Wake Forest, Carolina series or Clemson, Georgia Tech series?
Well, I uttered out Lee Foy to you while you were doing a promo. That was long, old school on that front. Chick Yonaker, right? Just love Yonaker.
Chicky.
Yeah, loved Yonaker in North Carolina. Tossed up the air
ball.
You know,
Bob, anytime I have to go obscure Clemson, I always go with my man, James Chubby Wells.
Chubby was great. Great dude, too. Funny. How about a little Skip Wise? How about we go Skip Wise on you? Old school. Tate's Lock era. Old school.
How about Lee Goza, Georgia Tech, who played for Brother Dwayne? Played for Brother Dwayne and played for Bobby Crimmins. Yeah, that's right, Mark. Bobby. Yeah, great. Yeah.
I like that because he was there when Georgia Tech played in that cave, man. Right when they joined the league and didn't have lights in their gym yet.
Sunshine coming through the portals.
I still love that.
Josh, you guys got to go find video of those. We got to have that video. We got to get that video.
Then Crimmins got there. He started bringing in some dudes now. The Thriller Dome. Man, alive. Did I love that going to that place. That's when I was in school.
George.
I'd make
George
that road
Felton,
trip.
Perry Clark on my staff. Yeah, it's great.
I was working with Jefferson Pollitt and still at Clemson, and I'd make that road trip and did Clemson and Georgia Tech games. I mean, I'd get the Thriller Dome, get there early. Jefferson Pollitt always had that terrible media food we'd eat, and then we'd go sit courtside with Mike Patrick, and, man, that place rocked.
Jeff Mullins?
Yes,
Jeff
sir.
Mullins sit there with you?
Yes,
you
sir.
Jeff Mullins, Mike Patrick?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
man, great. I love the old
Leonard
Thriller
Columbus
Dome.
Come down and visit with you?
Nah, they didn't have any Lenny stories. But the old Thriller Dome now, when Price and Dalrymple and those dudes are rocking it, whew, your ears would ring, man. The old Thriller Dome, when the Jackets had it going and Bobby was rolling, that was a great place to watch a game.
Yeah, it's great. George Felton, Perry Clark. Yeah. It's great.
Yep.
It's great. Yeah, had great staff. Good recruiters.
But
I need to get Crimmins back on the show, by the way.
Well, you know, he sent a text the other day. Hey, by the way, you know what I got yesterday in the mail? Real quick.
No. Oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah.
Because
you know that I like writing handwritten notes. That's my thing. I got a handwritten note in return yesterday from Coach Justin Fuente. And guess what?
Oh, boy.
Guess what?
He says
here, I loved the impression. Emphasized, I loved the impression. Justin Fuente, and has already made note, I am coming on the show in 21, but you got to promise that we're going to have a lot of fun. Coach, I promise you, we'll have a blast. Justin Fuente makes his debut on the show in 21. There it is. Handwritten evidence from the coach himself. I'm all for the handwritten note. I'm bringing it back. It's my goal. Once I win that Mega Millions.
You're going to wear a hoodie?
Wear
a hoodie?
If coach is on, I'm doing good. Okay. We're fun with Foo, man. I told you, he's my favorite when it comes on that stuff.
All right. Packer has predicted he's gotten 9 of 90 numbers in 2 attempts to win $1 billion.
10%.
We feel very good about his uptick.
Like pit basketball.
To winning the Mega Millions.
I am trending in the right direction. I am showing signs of life. Could be a factor. And if I win, I'm taking care of everybody. It's my goal.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.